Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
All right, this portion of the show brought to you by Alignment Healthcare, changing healthcare one person at a time. And every afternoon for the last couple of weeks, we've been taking an opportunity to congratulate a senior, somebody graduating high school or graduating college, on their achievements, their athletic achievements, their academic achievements. Since they don't get all the normal stuff, they don't get to go to commencement, they don't get to go to the prom, all that, the parties at the end of the year, so all that stuff. So we're just doing our little part in helping to recognize some seniors who have accomplished a lot during their high school and college careers.
And today's senior is Peyton Ray Carranza from Woodrow Wilson High in Long Beach, and she's online now. Peyton, welcome to Mason in Ireland. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Great.
We are excellent, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show for many reasons, Peyton. The first and foremost reason is it true you're going to UCLA in the fall?
That is very true. I am committed to UCLA in the fall.
Excellent.
Good for you.
Peyton, do you know how hard it is to get in there now? I got in there 30 years ago, and now they wouldn't even look at me. For you to get into UCLA, you should be exceptionally proud. What was your GPA in high school?
My weighted GPA was a 4.3.
Hear that,
damn.
Mason? 4.3.
That's impressive. 4.3. Yeah, I read here you never got a B at any point.
No, I've never gotten a B yet.
Good
that
for
is,
you.
That is awesome. And you're a swimmer?
I am a swimmer. I swim at Wilson, and I've swam club for a long time.
Now, are you going to swim at UCLA?
I'm not actually sure. I don't know if I'm quite fast enough to make the team, but I definitely want to try swimming club.
Yeah, and it's fun. But wait till you get there, Peyton. It's like it's the coolest place. Do you like movies? Do you like going to the movies?
I love going to the movies.
Okay, Peyton, I'm not making this up. Mason knows this because he's a big movie goer. There are like 40 movie theaters in Westwood. Like yeah. Any movie that's out, you can just on a whim walk into Westwood Village and go to the movies. So you're going to go. It's Camelot. You're going to absolutely love it and have the time of your life.
No way.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Really, it's like it was the best 4 years I've ever had was going to UCLA. It's really I'm excited for you. All right. So did you by chance happen to see the letter that your dad wrote to us nominating you for a senior shout out?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
He would
Make him show it to you. It is the sweetest letter. But like Mason and I are goofballs. We're idiots. We like to like goof around and make fun of everything. It is so well written and it highlights you. I feel like I know you. I mean, your dad explained everything you've been through. And how great you were in high school, and how you're going to UCLA, and you're taking care of your family, and how much he loves you. And he told us, I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, he told us the story of your mom. You lost your mom to leukemia last year, and he said that because of you and your brothers and sisters, that you've carried him. Tell us about your mom. What was your mom like?
Well, I would definitely call my mom my best friend. She was there for me. Like, I don't think many daughters have a relationship like I did with my mom. It was really crazy how close we were. And I can genuinely say she was my best friend, and I told her everything. And it's really crazy to not have her here, but I know she's looking down and even watching me do this. So
I'll read something that your dad wrote about you. He said, we hold each other up, but the strength, independence, and judgment my daughter displays at 17 years of age is breathtaking. She is beautiful, caring, compassionate, smart, and I couldn't have been blessed with more wonderful children. We all still have an emotional journey to travel together as we navigate the world without mom, but I am as strong as I can be for them and them for me.
Good for you, Peyton. How great is that to hear your dad lay that out like that?
It's definitely great because we just joke around at home, so it's interesting to
hear
that.
All right, so what are you guys doing during quarantine? How are you getting through the days? You watching a lot of movies? You goofing around? Is everybody at home? Is it you and your dad and your brothers and sisters?
It's just me, my dad, and my brother. I don't have any sisters.
Okay, so it's you and your brother.
I've been rearranging my room about 15 times a day and baking a lot of food. So I'm going to gain a lot of weight from the amount of sugar.
Everybody is.
Everybody's going to come out of this with a couple of extra pounds. Don't worry about that. Well, listen, congratulations on a great and amazing high school career. Excited for you to be going to UCLA. Really excited that really it sounds like a beautiful family, and that you have come through a really challenging time together with love and caring and supporting each other. And it's a beautiful story, and we can't think of anybody more appropriate to do a senior shout out for. So Peyton, thank you very much for coming on, and congratulations on a great high school career. We look forward to many great things from you.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Well, thank you, Peyton. And say hi to your dad and to your brother for us. And thank you for coming on.
Thank you. I will say hi to them.
Okay,
all
great.
Right.
Have a Thanks. Great day.
That is so nice.
Yeah, she sounds like a super cool kid.
Yeah, what a great girl. She was a valedictorian, so she would have been given the speech at her commencement.
Yeah, I wonder, we should have asked her. I wonder if she wrote it. I wonder if she wrote the commencement speech. And because she could, theoretically, I'm sure her dad's listening. If her dad's listening, tell us if she wrote the speech. Her dad's name is Harry. Harry Carranza. And Harry, you wrote a beautiful letter, by the way. Mason and I both loved it.
It's so great.
If she had written it, she could do it for her class virtually. You could put it on and just say, hey, you guys, here's what I was going to say. And I bet you they would all watch it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The way we're Zooming everything. Have you had any Zoom meetings?
All the time.
Do you? Who are you Zooming with?
Yeah, well, the poker game I play in is a Zoom.
Oh, is that a Zoom scenario?
Yeah. Jack, my son, Zooms almost all his classes. He had a speech teacher Zoom today. He had a karate class Zoom yesterday. He has a thing called after school hangout that he's doing a Zoom today. What's weird is I don't have a Zoom account. Apparently Zoom, anybody can Zoom for a few minutes, but if you're going
to
do it every day for a long time, you got
to
have an account. Do you have a Zoom account?
I don't have a Zoom account. I've got a Skype account that I pay, I think it is $2.99 a month for, because I'm doing all my podcasts on Skype. So I do pay for that, but you need to pay a certain amount. You get a free sample, a free trial, and then you get a Zoom account that you pay a certain amount for every month. Let me see. There was something I wanted to play here. Funch, did you get that lady I sent you on school?
Did you get that lady I sent you?
That lady I sent you on school?
You're going to have to give me a couple minutes on that one.
Okay, give me a couple minutes on that one.
All right. Let's play some voicemails. Funch, we set up this voicemail line. Lindsay set it up. The number is 530-ESPN-710, 530-377-6710. So every day we're getting more and more voicemails on the voicemail line. You just call that number and leave stuff. Funch, play one of those for us.
Hey, what's up, you guys? You guys all rolling? This is Mark from Muscovina. I was just wondering, why is it that on all other sports, no one knows how to fight except, the hockey players. Hockey players are able to fight each other. That'd be cool if sports were like that.
About boys,
all right, have a good day. Bye.
Fights and every the fights do tend to break out. There'll never be another big NBA fight after the Mouse and the Palace.
No.
Because if you throw a punch, you basically get suspended forever. And I've always said football fights are stupid because they're wearing helmets.
Yeah, exactly. And baseball fights, they don't really fight. They just kind of muck around a little bit. They push each other.
And then everybody, it's what Jalen Rose calls the hold me back.
Yeah,
fights.
You hardly ever see a legit brawl in baseball. There really is. There is no official brawling. There's just, they act like they're brawling because they're supposed to. It's almost like an obligation after somebody gets hit by a pitch. Hey, you know who did a press conference is Jared Goff.
With a new mustache.
With a new mustache, which looks, and I'm a big Jared Goff fan, looks terrible. That is a terrible looking mustache. Who wears just a mustache now?
Yeah, it's very 70s.
Who can pull that off? Who can pull off just, you can pull off the Van Dyke, you can pull off the beard, you can pull off the scruffy face, but you can't really pull off a mustache. And Jared, I'm sorry, man, you're not doing it. But he did do a presser today. Here he is, Jared. Do you have that, Funch?
Yes, I do.
Okay, here's Jared on the team losing Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks.
It's tough to lose friends. I think it's always super tough to lose friends and teammates, and that's part of the business. I'm in year five now, and kind of getting them to it a little bit at the same time. You know, me and Brandon and me and Todd are extremely close and always will be. And so it is tough from that standpoint, losing those guys. I understand there's a business in this game, and those two guys understand that as well, and that was the decision made. And whatever the decision is, you know, we move forward. But it's hard, definitely, just from a friend standpoint, to lose those guys to different teams.
Here he is on the possibility of playing NFL games with no fans.
Not ideal. Not what you want to do. I understand, you know, there are, you know, a lot of bigger implications in place right now as far as health of the world. But, you know, I know that's not the vision that we had moving to L.A., and I know that's not the vision that Mr. Kroenke had ultimately. But if that is what it is, you know, we have to roll with it. I don't think, you know, that's anything we want to do. But, again, I'm preparing for full stadiums. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I don't know what the percentages are. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. Where will this progress? I don't know. You guys don't know. No one knows. So we're going to see in the next 3 or 4 months and find out.
And here he is on whether or not he would be willing to restructure his contract.
Yeah, I think that's a better question for Kevin and my agent. I think there's been some stuff about like being able to clear some cap space. And if so, I'm all for it. I don't see why not. It doesn't change anything for me, and it helps the team out. So.
At some point he's going to need to restructure his contract in order for them to remain competitive. Because I'm not saying he doesn't deserve the money. The Rams offered it. He signed for it. He certainly owed the money. But restructuring it would give the Rams some additional flexibility. The ultimate issue for the Rams is, can they nail this draft? You know, they've got multiple picks in the second round. I think they got multiple picks in the third round. They're going to have to come up with winners in that group. They're going to have to nail
guys
some
who
stuff.
And guys who can play right away.
Can play right away.
Because those guys are going to have to step in and play. You know, there's no time. The Rams have pretty much emptied their roster. There's not going to be a time for these guys to work up to stuff. There's going to be some rookies that probably have to start and definitely have to play this year.
And, you know, they've done a good job in the draft. Last year they drafted Taylor Rapp in the second round. He's been great. Darrell Henderson, we haven't even gotten a chance to see yet.
Right. I don't think there's not going to be a lot of room for a Darrell Henderson this year, a guy you can stash on the end of the bench and hardly play at all.
No, he's got to play.
And third round picks have got to play now.
Ideally, Darrell Henderson's going to play. Then they drafted two offensive linemen that both figured prominently. At 79 last year, they took David Long, and at 97, they took Bobby Evans. And both those guys ended up figuring into the offensive line by the end of the season. So they have been effective in drafting guys that have stepped right in and contributed, and that's absolutely what they're going to need to do this year. I think we're not going to have less on the show until after the draft.
Okay.
After the draft.
So have you accepted in your own head that you're probably not going to set foot in that new stadium this year?
I have. Yeah, I have.
And there's probably not even going to be a concert there, mostly.
No, I mean,
based on what Eric Garcetti said today, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think if you think about this, they were supposed to open July the 26th and 27th with back-to-back Taylor Swift concerts. That's obviously not going to happen. There was a big Guns N' Roses show I was excited about at SoFi Stadium. That was in August. I think that's not happening. And I think we are going to move into a period where those games, which will be weird, are going to be played without those mass gatherings. But, you know, if you think about it, I think the new stadium's capacity is 70,000, or maybe 60,000. The game isn't just played for those 60,000. It's played for the millions that are watching the game. And so players are going to have to figure out a way to adjust to it. What's interesting is the idea of a home field is not going to be as important as it normally is. You're going to be playing, almost every game is going to be a neutral site game with no fans. You may change addresses, but There are no fans that are going to be rooting for you. There's nobody going to be chanting defense. There's nobody that's going to be cheering. The idea of a home field advantage is going to be completely irrelevant. So if the Rams do go and play, I'm trying to think of a really tough place where they play, Seattle, where they've got the 12th man. Well, if they don't have the 12th man, a game in Seattle isn't nearly as tough as it would be with those fans there. So that's one of the weird dynamics is if we go back to sports and we don't have fans, there's going to be kind of no such thing as a home advantage. You're not going to get that big roar of the crowd in your favor. Nobody's going to be chanting MVP, MVP, when LeBron, comes into the game or has a massive, dunk. All that stuff is going to be non-existent. So it's going to be surreal to watch. It's going to be surreal for them, but I think it is going to be our reality for the rest of this year. I believe that there will be sports. And Anthony Fauci kind of said as much, said there is going to be some form of sports this year. It's just not going to be with fans. And he said that specifically, no fans.
All right, coming up, you know, ESPN right now is running Game 5 of the 2009 NBA Finals.
I'm trying to think what that is.
Lakers beat the Magic and win the title. It was the first Pau Gasol Laker championship with Kobe and Pau and those guys.
Isn't that the one where Joey Buss gave the speech at the
end? Yes, and I'll tell you, I'm sure I've told it on the air before, but I'll tell you a very funny, embarrassing story about the next day.
Okay.
When we come back.
All right, cool. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. We are positive. We are enthusiastic. We thank all of you who are out there doing all the stuff that that allows us to shelter in place. Special salute to anybody that's out there fixing cars. Special salute to anybody who's out there checking groceries. That's kind of a scary place to be, working in pharmacies, working in drugstores, all those essential places. And, of course, doctors and nurses and people who are on the front lines dealing with COVID patients on a daily basis. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate you. And you are the ones that are allowing us to stay at home and to bend this curve in our favor. Los Angeles and California overall has done a great job, sticking with the plan to shelter at home.
All right, so a couple stories. Number one, James Worthy just sent out a tweet that I think is worth sharing. Remember when Worthy was at North Carolina, when he played with Michael Jordan, he wore number 52. That was his number in high school and in college at UNC. And so he gets drafted by the Lakers, and number 52 is already being worn by Jamal Wilkes, so he can't wear it. So he was the number one pick in the whole draft. So it was a pretty big deal at the time. And he didn't know what number he should ask for, so his dad suggested that he wear 42 because that's what Jackie Robinson wore. And his dad was a big Jackie Robinson fan. So that's how James Worthy decided on the number 42. And now he's in the Hall of Fame, and because he is, the Lakers have retired that number 42. It's obviously retired for every team in baseball, and it's retired for the Lakers. But James, Big Game James, wore that number because he couldn't wear 52, and his dad said, you should wear 42 because that was Jackie Robinson's number.
Yep.
So kind of a cool L.A. story there. All right,
that
so
is
I mentioned,
cool.
I mentioned right now on ESPN, they are running Game 5 of the 2009 NBA Finals. This was the first Kobe-Pau championship. Remember, Kobe and Pau went to three straight finals, 08, yep. 09, and 10. This was the first time they lost in 8. This was the first one they won in 9, and then they won back-to-back in 10. So they win this game. Spoiler alert, if you're watching, the Lakers win. And the game ends. They have the big celebration at the arena, and we all get back to the hotel, and our charter flight is leaving Orlando and flying back to Los Angeles at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so we get back to the hotel, and the Lakers generously have rented an entire hotel ballroom to keep the party going.
Right.
So by the time we get back there, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and we just go all night. Like, nobody goes to bed. We basically emptied whatever booze was in the place. Anybody in the traveling party, a lot of the bus family had come down. You mentioned that was the first time Joey kind of introduced himself to the public. Joey accepted the trophy on behalf of his dad. And you know, so the bus family was there. A lot of friends, family, Laker Hall of Famers were there. And just ridiculously fun. And somebody mentions at about 6 o'clock in the morning that we should all go pack up because we're leaving in a few hours.
Right.
So I leave, and I go up to my room, and I take a shower, and I pack, and I said, I'm not going to sleep because if I go to sleep, I won't wake up. Now, as far as I know, no one has ever missed a Lakers chartered flight. Like, some guys have gotten caught in traffic and didn't make it, or one time we were going to Toronto, Stu forgot his passport. So he had to go home and get it. But nobody's just blatantly missed a flight. And so we get on the bus, and it's like 10:45, and our bus is leaving at 11.
Yep.
And there's no Trudell.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, Trudell had just joined us like maybe a year or two earlier. I think his first year there was 08, 07 or 08. And I kind of looked out for him because he was, you know, kind of did what I did, and he was a young guy. And both Billy Mack and I have always kind of looked out for Mike. So I start calling Trudell on his cell phone. Nothing. I'm calling his room. Nothing. I leave 16 messages for him. Nothing. So now I don't know what I should do because it's 10:55. The bus is leaving in 5 minutes. And if I get off the bus, I'm going to miss it. But I don't know if he's okay. I don't know if he's still partying in the room. I don't know. I have no idea what to do. Now, at that point, what would you have done?
It's Trudell.
Yeah.
He's a resourceful guy. I would have just gone.
Me too. That's what I decided to do, too. I said, I've done...
Like, you can only do so much.
I've done everything I can do. Ty Nall's looking for him. I'm looking for him. Billy's looking for him. We're like, you know, Mike's a responsible guy. He's never missed a flight. I hope that nothing happened to him. It's 10:58, and we've pretty much given up. And running out of the hotel, literally one shoe, packing his suitcase while he's running, like sticking stuff out of his right hand into an open bag in his left hand while he's hopping on one foot. You can tell that he has, you know, he doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know. His shirt's on backwards. Trudell is running for the bus, and he makes it by like 30 seconds. And we all look at him and go, what the hell happened? He goes, I was only going to go to sleep for 15 minutes.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know. His finger wasn't up. And he made it by like 15 seconds. And since then, Trudell has never come close to missing a flight. Ever. He's like one of the first people on the bus. But that was his near miss, is the night after this game in Orlando when the Lakers won the title. But
wow.
I'm glad to see you would have handled it exactly the way I did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can only
feel
do
bad,
so much. I mean,
but
it's nice
on the
kid,
bus.
But
yeah.
Nice kid, but, you know, Mikey. It's all I can do, brother. It's all I can do.
We should probably call him and ask him what he remembers about that. That was as close as anyone's ever come to, like, you've seen people run through airports, like,
yep.
Late. This was... Hair not combed, shirt on sideways, packing stuff in his bag, jumping on one foot. But he made it. That's all that matters.
You know what I used to do at airports when I flew a lot between New York and Los Angeles? And sometimes I had to stop in between. I'd stop in Houston or somewhere like that. I would always I'm not afraid to lay on the ground at an airport. So I'd take my carry-on bag. I'd put it on the ground. I'd lay down, I put my head on it, and I would rest and wait for the plane. So on three different occasions during my time in New York when I was flying back and forth, I fell completely asleep and missed the flight.
Oh, I've done that. I did
just
that.
Just sleeping and missed the flight.
I was flying with a KCAL guy, a photographer named Josh Bradford, and Josh and I were sitting with our backs to the gate where they were boarding, and we both nodded off at the same time. And but what are the odds of that happening? Two guys doing it. Both of us not off, and we wake up 45 minutes later, and the flight was gone. And we'd sit around for 2 hours and get the next one.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, and boy, now I bet you airports got to be ghost towns, huh?
Oh, it's got to be crazy.
I saw an ad today. I got an email today for I could go to Costa Rica for 7 days and nights, airfare, hotel, and a car for $399.
No friggin' way. Yeah.
You got to go before, you got to use it in 2020. But that was the deal.
Just in 2020? So you can plan it for December?
Yeah. You want me to send it to you?
Yeah, send it to me.
I couldn't believe it. $399.
Oh, that's crazy.
But, you know, who knows? We're going to be able to get back. Who knows what
Costa
the coronavirus
Rica,
is going to look like.
Costa Rica only has 4 deaths from coronavirus.
But there are worse places to be stuck.
Oh, it's Costa Rica's beautiful. It's
and, you know, we had
place.
That Fast Track story a little while ago where tourism is a huge part of their economy. And,
oh, yeah.
and 95% of the tourism has stopped.
Yep. Yeah.
So they're trying anything to get people in there.
Oh, anything. Hotels, hospitality, airlines. I mean, those guys are just friggin' screwed right now. We've got a friend who works. She's an actress, but she works as a bartender. It's like, when's she going to
By the way, Mace, all actors and actresses work in some type of food service
they,
industry.
They do.
As
that
a
is
bartender
the,
or a waiter.
That is the stepping stone to movie star. But, I mean, you know, where do you work? Even when it's over, how many bartenders do they actually need? I mean, all that stuff. These are all questions that are going to be asked.
Yeah, but so why did you bring her up?
Planned for.
Did she find a good rate someplace?
No, I brought her up just because I was worried about her.
Oh, okay. So speaking,
it had absolutely nothing to do with Costa Rica.
Okay. So speaking of actors and actresses, Mark Ellis is going to join us next. Mark is from Rotten Tomatoes. If you're like me, I find myself every night looking for stuff to watch. Like tonight, I've decided based on our show today that I'm going to watch 42.
Yeah.
Also, Mrs. America starts tonight on Hulu.
Yeah. Now, is that on FX or Hulu?
It's produced by FX, but you watch it on Hulu.
I want to watch that too. And then the other one that's great tonight is, have you ever watched What We Do in the Shadows?
No.
Oh, so good. It's like a reality show, but it's about vampires.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, it is. It's a reality show. It's like behind.
Zero chance.
It's like the real vampires of
Idiot.
Whatever town. It is so friggin' funny. It's by the guy that did Jojo Rabbit.
It's comedic?
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious. It's the funniest
thing.
So
this is
show.
Some of the stuff we will throw at Mark Ellis, who's coming up next.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? It is Wednesday, and we are all on television, on Netflix, on streaming, on demand, on Hulu, all of the places where we get shows, and we are looking for stuff. And there is some new stuff. Like, unfortunately, I don't watch Ozark, but I heard season 3 of Ozark was really, really good.
I watched season 1 and then stopped, but it's interesting. It's just kind of out there. You got to.
Are you watching Brockmire?
Yes.
Brockmire's back.
Yeah.
What We Do in the Shadows is back. By the way, I want to watch the Mrs. America show. It's on Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, tonight I'm going 42, and I'm going Mrs. America.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right, joining us right now from Rotten Tomatoes is Mark Ellis. Mark, how you doing, man?
Well, good, gentlemen. I'm actually booking my tickets to Costa Rica based on your previous segment.
Yeah, you can get an unbelievable deal, Mark. That's the good news. The bad news is I don't know if you'll ever make it back.
I don't think LAX would let me in at this point, but it's worth rolling the dice for $300, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Mark, we have a bad connection. Funch, put him on hold. Pick him up and see if we can get Mark to a better spot or maybe on a different line, and we'll go from that. But maybe we might have to make it work. Mace, were you having trouble hearing him?
Yeah, I was. He was. He sounded like he might be on a speakerphone.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get a better connection with Mark. Now, I go to Rotten Tomatoes all the time. Mark does most of their on-air stuff.
Yes,
And I go to Rotten Tomatoes all the time. Do you pay more attention when you go to Rotten Tomatoes on what the critics say or what the audience says?
It is what the critics say. But I will tell you that I often completely disagree with what the critics say. What I try to do is to not look at the Rotten Tomatoes score before I go to the movie, and then check what the Rotten Tomatoes score is after the movie. I do it the opposite way. Right,
like,
right.
I always look at something. Like, here's something that's encouraging, since we're both going to watch it. Mrs. America, 95% of people who've seen it have liked it.
Oh, the audience score is 95%?
Well, I would assume this is mostly a critic score because, yeah, it's 41 critics. There's zero user ratings because it hasn't aired yet.
Right.
So now we got Mark. Mark, have you seen Mrs. America yet?
I have not caught Mrs. America yet, though, but I'm with you. I'm excited about watching that. And, you know, if you're talking about that versus what we do in Shadows, I'd probably lean more toward vampire humor, but I think either one, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, this is a really underrated show that sometimes I feel like I'm the only one watching it. But what we do in the Shadows is by Taika Waititi, the guy that did Jojo Rabbit. And it is so frigging genius. It's a reality show. John, imagine there's a coven of
By the way, Mace,
vampires.
Let me interrupt you. 100% score for what we do in the Shadows. 100%.
So it's a coven of vampires, and they treat it like a reality show, like there are cameras in there following them. It is so unbelievably creative and funny and twisted. And do you watch it, Mark?
I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of the original movie as well. It really, it's like The Office meets Bram Stoker's Dracula. Because you get such a great comedic vibe from it. And when you watch it, you say, well, it's a no-brainer for a huge franchise like the Marvel Cinematic Universe to want to get a guy like Taika Waititi to put his comedy into the comic book movie world. And then you go back and you watch, like you said, Season 2 currently at 100%, and Season 1, I think, is 97%. But I will give Mrs. America points because Season 1 is at 95% on the tomato meter. So you guys are having an A average so far.
All right, so Mark, when people, and people must give you this all the time, and probably more now that we're in quarantine, when people reach out to you and say, all right, man, I need stuff to watch, where do you start? Where do you point them?
Well, I ask them, how far are you in Tiger King? Is usually the first question.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a phenomenon like Tiger King where it just happened to drop at exactly the right moment and everybody started watching it?
I don't think in terms of a documentary. I think Stranger Things is one that you can look back on and say, that just kind of started like a comet on Netflix, and nobody really knew it was coming out. We just saw this weird trailer, and it had a lot of 80s throwbacks, and everybody watched Stranger Things that weekend. And then Tiger King, you talk about finding a silver lining in a cloudy, gray sky world that we live in. Tiger King just came along at the perfect moment when everybody was looking for that thing to binge. And so, particularly for sports fans like all three of us, I think we're just waiting for something to give us our binge diet until we hit April 19th and we can watch The Last Dance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I've got one. I want to throw at you, Mark. I absolutely love this show. It's a David Simon show. It's called The Plot Against America. I got so wrapped up in that show, and I see it's like 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's an HBO series. Did you get a chance to watch it?
I did, and I found it captivating. I mean, I brought up Stranger Things, and Winona Ryder showing up again, showing us just what an incredible actress she is. And you're right, 87% on the tomato meter. It's a thing that was not highly advertised, because a lot of times HBO shows, you get hyped up for them. I mean, I was waiting for McMillions for 3 months because I saw the billboards all over town. America was something that flew in a little under the radar, and sometimes that makes for the best content, where we're not expecting it, we're surprised when it happened, and then we get wrapped up inside it.
So we're talking to Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes. Mark, I asked Mason this while we were dialing you up, but I'm curious how you answer it. When you look something up on the tomato meter, do you pay more attention to the critics or to the audience?
My mind usually goes to the critic score because that's been around for longer. The audience score is something that's been recently introduced, and we've been able to verify audience members, so you know it's a real audience member that is voting on this thing and giving their contribution to the overall meter. But I always go to the critic score because I look at it as a barometer. It really doesn't factor into if I'm going to like something or not, because I trust my own opinion. But I find that the tomato meter, when it's the critics, and it's particularly the critics' consensus, it's something I look forward to, because it's on the website and it just gives you little blurbs that each critic has said about a show. So if you follow a particular critic or you have a few that you really trust, you'll see what they have to say about the show, and it helps inform your remote control.
You know, one of the things, and I was just telling John, one of the things I like to do, because I see I probably see, and I'm not kidding about this, I saw 75 movies in theaters last year. I go to the movies. I see doubleheaders almost every weekend, double features. I absolutely love the experience of going to the movies. And what I like to do is to go see the movie completely blind, without having read Rotten Tomatoes, and then when I come out, look at the Rotten Tomatoes reviews and see if I agreed with them or not. And it's interesting the number of times I loved the movie and the critics hated, or vice versa. So I know that's not the way you're supposed to use Rotten Tomatoes, but that's the way I kind of get, I enjoy using it.
It's a perfectly fine thing to do. You're not breaking the law by doing that. basically what you're doing is you're going in blind to experience something for the very first time. And I've found people that like doing it both ways. I think people like knowing what the tomato meter says ahead of time, simply because when you go see a movie, and when we're all lucky enough to go back to a movie theater after this, it costs money. You're going to go, and if you're like me, you're not just buying a ticket. You're loading up on popcorn. You're getting butter halfway through, and then you have them fill in the rest of the popcorn. Then you get more butter on top of it, and you get a large soda. So you're dropping easy $30 if you're going by yourself, and you kind of want to know what you're getting into. But I've totally experienced movies the same way, where I'm like that with Star Wars movies. Like, luckily, I am one of the first people to get to see Star Wars movies because I live an insanely privileged existence that I got so lucky to do. But I don't want to know anything anyone else has to say about Star Wars until I get to put my own eyeball on it.
We're talking to Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes. Mark, so there's a weird existence for most people right now. They're low on money because a lot of people are out of work, and but they're high on time because we're all sheltering at home. So you watch everything. Answer this for me. If you were sitting at home, I'm an idiot, so I pay for all these things. But if you're sitting at home and you only have enough money to pay for one of the streaming services, and you're trying to decide between Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu, where are you sending me?
Oh, you're asking me to get rid of two of my kids here. Wow.
Right. I'm giving you the ultimate Sophie's choice for a guy in your job.
I think that I'm going to have to say Netflix, and I'll say it for this reason, is because I think any one of those three platforms is going to give you quality entertainment, and there's more stuff on there than you could ever actually watch, even if you're in an extended quarantine. But the reason I'm going with Netflix is I think that Netflix has a little bit more of that content that people are going to be talking about, and they're not going to be talking about it at the water cooler for a few months, but when you Zoom with your family, when you FaceTime with your friends, it's the stuff like the Tiger Kings of the world, like Ozark, like all the comedy specials that they have up there right now. Chris DeLay just released his last night. I think that those are the ones that you want to be informed about. So while you can get Amazon and enjoy the heck out of Hunters or Hulu, you can now watch Parasite, which won the Academy Award on Hulu. I think Netflix, by the narrowest of margins, I mean, we're talking triple overtime here, I'm giving Netflix the win.
You know, one thing I've had a lot of fun doing during this break is going back and watching some movies that I haven't seen in a very, very long time. So Chinatown, I went back and saw, which is my favorite movie of all time. I watched an old Francis Ford Coppola movie called The Conversation, which is an absolute classic. I watched the first Coen Brothers movie, which was Blood Simple. I watched that on Friday night. Amazing movie. It's amazing to go back and look at movies from a historical perspective, movies that are really, really significant, to see kind of where our taste in movies came from.
I think that you hit on something where I think a lot of times people, when they're in a situation like what we're all going through, sometimes you just want that comfort food. Sometimes you don't want to invest in anything new. You want to go back and revisit the classics. And so for somebody like me, I'm a comedian too, so I love watching the spoof movies from the 80s. I love watching Top Secret and Airplane, which, by the way, Airplane still the single greatest athlete performance in a movie by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes, absolutely.
But I got some trivia for you. You mentioned The Conversation. So can you name the actor who had their very first speaking role in that movie?
Was it John Cassell?
Looking for Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford!
Wow. That is Harrison a good Ford. Trivia question.
And here's the best thing about it, for me personally, is because he's paging, his line is paging Mr. Ellis, and that's my last name. And so I get to say that Harrison Ford was having a brief conversation with me back in, before I was born.
Wow.
Well, you know, Mark, what's interesting about you bringing his name up is I'm going to watch 42 tonight because it's Jackie Robinson Day. And,
yeah.
You know, Harrison Ford was actually great as Branch Rickey in 42. And Chadwick Boseman is great as Jackie. But there was a movie that Jackie played himself in called The Jackie Robinson Story, and it's almost unwatchable. You know, it's like Jackie wasn't an actor, and like they cleaned it up so much that it wasn't the real story. So it's strange that if you have your choice on Jackie Robinson Day to watch either The Jackie Robinson Story, which stars Jackie in the lead role, or to watch 42. In my opinion, 42 is way better. Have you ever
seen
it?
By the way, Jackie Robinson's story is at 63% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's not a total disaster.
Mark, have you seen the Jackie Robinson story with Jackie?
I saw the Jackie Robinson story when I was a very little kid. So, quick backstory on me. I was 7 years old when my favorite team, the Washington Redskins, won Super Bowl 22, and I was a big Doug Williams fan, so my parents wanted to show me the Jackie Robinson story on the heels of that as we went into baseball season. So I don't remember watching it from a quality standpoint, but I will tell you this. I think 42 is probably the better movie. The better movie poster is the Jackie Robinson story. Go back, Google that poster. It looks like the best 1950s baseball card you've ever seen.
Okay, we'll look it up.
But I got to tell you, 42 was just such a stunning performance by Chadwick Boseman, who would go on to be Black Panther. And you're right, bring up Harrison Ford as Branch Rickey. I remember watching that movie and thinking, like, Harrison Ford still has it. Like, you know, he was in movies like Firewall and stuff, and you felt like maybe he was mailing it in. When you watch 42, that's a great actor that is invested in the script.
Yeah, the only problem with him is I live in Venice near the Santa Monica Airport, and he keeps crashing his planes over here.
Oh, man, Mark, I just
It's at some point realize you can't fly planes anymore.
Yeah, he should stop doing that. I just looked up your movie poster. You're right. It's fantastic. Oh,
yeah.
My, like you, this is something you'd want to hang in your house. And you can buy it for $15 right now on PosterBee. Oh, my gosh, that's a great call.
That's the ultimate, you know, because if you have the Jackie Robinson story poster framed and then you're watching 42 on your TV, I mean, that's just a slap in the face, fellas. Come on.
There you go.
There are a couple of good documentaries. We talked about one last week, When We Were Kings. Do you know When We Were Kings?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When We Were Kings, you know, everybody loves talking about, rightfully so, how great the Ken Burns baseball documentary is. And for that matter, When It Was a Game, the HBO series that was done in the 90s. But I think When We Were Kings, I would put that up there with any sports docuseries of all time. The Last Dance has a lot to live up to if it wants to compete with that.
The other one that I was just looking at documentaries, the other documentary, if nobody's seen, that I think is just one of the great documentaries of the last of this century since you know we're 20 years in is Searching for Sugar Man. Do you know that documentary?
Searching for Sugar Man. Yeah. Now, if you look at it and you go by the Rotten Tomatoes score of Searching for Sugar Man, I mean, first of all, you'll probably be, what exactly is this? But it's 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's that for a reason, because I believe it came out in January of 2012, and it's just the South African phenomenon that you're looking for, and it's a fascinating documentary, and they don't do documentaries where it's like you're watching the film crew and you feel like they don't know if this documentary is going to have an ending or not.
Right. And it turns out that they do. They've got a great ending and a great moment at the end, and it really, really pays off. I find that documentaries are comforting to me. Like when Alex Gibney does something, I'm like, oh, yeah, Alex Gibney, I can trust him. The guy that did the Enron documentary. Documentaries are like what I tend to fall back on.
By the way, speaking of documentaries, Mark, have you seen The Last Dance yet, or are you going to see it for the first time on Sunday like Mason and I?
I'm going to experience it for the first time like everybody else, but I was on Twitter like lobbying along with everybody else a few months ago when we started to think we might be home for advanced stretches of time, knowing that The Last Dance was coming out. Because don't forget, we saw this trailer in 2018.
during Christmas Day, during all the NBA games, I was sitting at my house in Virginia with my mom, and I see the trailer, and I'm getting excited, like, oh, this thing's probably coming out next week. And then it says 2020, and it's like a gut punch. I don't know if I'm still going to be alive in a year, but luckily, we're here, and we only have a couple days left, and I'm sure ESPN is going to stretch it out, but my God, you talk about the team of my youth. Michael Jordan, it was just on another level. That team, I think, gets lost in history a little bit because people want to talk about how they wouldn't match up against the modern-day Warriors or the Lakers or the Clippers this season. But I think that Bulls team, I would put them up there against anyone.
Hey, Mark, thanks for knowing that.
Yeah, thanks. I was going to ask you, do you think that will be like the next Tiger King? Is that going to be, in terms of Rotten Tomatoes and everybody talk, is that going to be the next Tiger King?
I think the Last Dance, I mean, nothing's ever going to be the next Tiger King. It's such its own mess. But I think the Last Dance is going to be the one that people are talking about because we're just so starved for sports right now. And if we can't have live sports, reliving the greatest sports team of all time is the next best thing, and that's what the Chicago Bulls of the 90s were.
Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it. Let's do this again as we continue to get through this crazy, weird period in world history.
I appreciate what y'all are doing. You guys are keeping my life normal, listening to y'all every weekday, so I'm happy to do it anytime. Just give me a buzz.
All cool. Right,
stay
thanks,
safe.
Mark.
There's Mark Ellis from Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, I think that the Jordan documentary is going to be the next big phenomenon that we all experience together. You know, it doesn't happen very often that we all watch something at the same time and experience it in the same way at the same time. Monday, we will all be talking about it. It premieres at Pacific time, 6 o'clock Pacific time, and then the second episode will be at 7 o'clock Pacific time. And Monday we will be all over it, cause I think it's going to be really fun. And at some point we'll get the filmmakers on. We'll do all that kind of stuff, to sort of enhance the whole experience. But I cannot wait for it. Cannot wait.
Man, I've got this game on in the background, the game 5 of, the 2009 finals.
Yep.
The Lakers were just so hard to guard. If you gave the ball to Kobe and the other team didn't double him, he just cooked you.
Yep.
And then Kobe would throw it to Odom, and they'd have a big guy. Odom was unguardable in these years. I mean, if they had a big guy on him, he'd just go right around him. And if they had a small guy on him, he'd just shoot over him. You know, no wonder this team went to 3 straight finals. They're just really, really good. People forget how great that team was.
All right.
We're going Fast Track
next.
Time.
Coming up next, 5 o'clock Fast Track. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.